This is The Moonfish, Chapter 1, Bell Aquin. Some say that staring at the stars is like gazing out at the ocean. You never know when something will swim by. Before the land and the infinite ocean, before all life on this planet, before the planet itself, there were great leviathans that traveled through space. These beings had gargantuan silver-blue bodies, and they floated past planets and stars, propelled by their flukes, flippers, and fins. Stories and songs of these whales are etched into history, how they sailed through space like it was a grand ocean. Each whale was seeking the deepest corners of the galaxy, places where life could flourish, water could flow, and music could play. In days past, in a language no longer spoken, these whales were called the Shenlan. But today, those of us who still remember the whales call them the Moonfish. A single moonfish gave birth to our world. It sang as it sailed the sea of space. Its lone voice contained 1,000 instruments. The melodies it sung became harmonies. The harmonies became infinities. Soon, rocks, debris, and matter drifting through space became trapped in the music of the moonfish. The debris swirled within the tug of gravity. Soon, it was forged into a pearl orb. The moonfish swam round the pearl, singing 1,000 songs for 1,000 years. Each melody bathed the pearl in dancing flame. The pearl swelled, its surface now coarse with stone and mineral. Water soon sprang from the pearl's core, birthing streams, lakes, and oceans. Soon the moonfish's songs created seeds. The seeds scattered across continents and oceans. Each seed contained instincts, memories, emotions, and lessons. All that is needed for life to flourish. From this whale, this single being, came an orchestra. One which composed an entire planet from nothingness. And on the final day, the moonfish sang a song that created the moon. Here inside its lunar sanctuary, the weary giant rests and watches over the planet it had spent a millennium conducting. The last note sung by the moonfish was the name of our new world, Sonadae. And so, the next time you see the moon, you may be staring into the eyes of the moonfish. That's because some of us still believe that, to this day, it continues to look upon us, observing and guiding Sonadae through both hardship and prosperity. If you feel lost in this world, crippled by uncertainty and trapped in the darkness of fear, look up and listen. The melodies of the moonfish will light your way. Our tale begins in the age of humans and other beings that resemble them. Humans have cultivated Sonadae with tall cities made of stone. Though they travel on foot, by horse and carriage, and on wooden ships, these creatures have been blessed by the moonfish with beautiful minds, ones destined to cultivate technological and artistic works with beauty and wonder beyond description. Such gifts are suppressed by greed, arrogance, and fear. Sonadae has witnessed many wars, but never one so brutal as the End of Nations or Eon War. This era bred mighty warriors in feats of heroism. But the survivors paid a heavy price for their sins, and death and suffering from both adversary and ally were fathomless. The Eon War, the darkest chapter Sonade has seen, is no more. And in this age of sustained peace, there are children, even adults, who know war only as facts, figures, and stories on a page. This is certainly true for a humble village tucked far away in Sonade's largest continent. This town is called Bel Aquin, and though it is a holy place, there are few left who remember it as such. Life here is comfortable, and most would prefer it stay this way, that nothing upset the peace for which their ancestors worked so hard to attain. But such peace would soon be disturbed. It was on this night, over Bel Aquin's river, that storm clouds manifested from nothingness. The river was pelted by a violent downpour, the gentle current frenzied into a torrent. And then, in the deluge and chaos, something else took shape. A young man, whose motionless body was carried away in the strength of the river current. Soon, the storm began to decrescendo, and a steady rain was the only reminder of the storm's wrath. The Aquin River carried the boy on his way, but his passing would not go unnoticed. By morning, there were already stories and speculations among the locals, but they quickly returned to their routines. Farmers tended to their fields, craft workers tinkered with their tools, and fishers netted modest yields. But not all the townsfolk had a trade to rouse them in the morning. This was true for Miss Rhea, a young woman of great strength and a sharp intellect. Her athletic prowess was dedicated solely to one thing, the sword, a wooden sword to be precise, one which she swung to and fro like she was a hero in the Eon War. But she found it a great tragedy that the thing she loved most was of no use to anyone in an age of world peace. Rhea shielded her eyes from the sun with her long hair and was prepared to let the entire morning slip by as she stayed cozy in her bed. But it was not to be. "Hey," called a young woman's voice. Rhea rolled over and tried to muffle the noise with her pillow. "Come on, Rhea," the voice persisted. Rhea furrowed her brow and rose out of bed. "Aha! I knew my lazy cousin was asleep," said the young woman. "Luna?" Rhea murmured. "When did you get back?" "Last night, before the storm, thankfully." Luna had her hair in a ponytail and was dressed in one of her smart, modern outfits she purchased during her many travels to big cities. In this moment, Rhea realized she had never seen Luna as anything other than ready to face the day. Luna turned and motioned towards Rhea. "Come on, I want to show you something." "All right," said Rhea. "I'll come by after a few more hours."
No,
said Luna, grabbing Rhea's arm. "That'll make you crankier. I've got something that'll help you wake up." Rhea narrowed her eyes, but let herself be dragged away, knowing full well there was no stopping a determined Luna. Luna set the ceramic mug down on the dusty wooden table. "What is this stuff?" frowned Rhea. The drink was a chocolate brown color with steam stirring in the air above it. "It's called kava," said Luna. "I'm kind of obsessed with it." "Never heard of it," said Rhea, sniffing the rich aroma. "It's getting popular. I'm sure everyone in Bel Aquin will be drinking it soon." Rhea gave a doubtful nod, then reluctantly took a sip. The bitter, dark roasted flavors tasted foreign and abhorrent. But moments later, she relished the rich chocolatey notes she had smelled earlier. She could not decide if the drink was dreadful or one of the greatest things she had ever tasted. "Huh," was all Rhea could articulate. Luna chuckled. "Yeah, it's an acquired taste, but chances are you'll get hooked quick." Rhea nodded and took a few more sips. "Maybe, but Belaquin doesn't have a sophisticated palate like you city types." "Oh, I see. I'm just one of those city folk to you now," Luna protested playfully. "Anyway, what I really wanted to show you was, well..." Luna spread her arms around and looked up at the ceiling. "This place." Rhea was so tired she never bothered asking where they were as Luna led her into this place. The room was spacious, with a wooden bar table and stools, and a fireplace that looked like it hadn't been lit in eons. A thin layer of dust covered every surface, except the kettle Luna had cleaned to boil water for the kava. "Wait a minute. Is this?" said Rhea, as distant memories faded into view. "Yeah," said Luna. "Remember my grandpa on my dad's side? Well, this was his old pub. We were little kids when it closed." She stood up and paced, contemplating the room's history. "Before Grandpa died, he gave me this sealed letter and said I should open it when I'm feeling stuck. And that's exactly how I feel now that school is done. There's so many things I want to do, but I can't seem to get any of them started. But then I remembered the letter, and it turns out my grandpa left me the deed to this old pub. Since then, that's all I can think about. What to do with this space, and what I could turn it into." Rhea frowned. "I mean, that's nice that he left you the deed and everything, but I don't know, that doesn't quite make sense." "What do you mean?" Luna asked. "I don't know, you went to that fancy school in Tullian City. I figured you'd be doing something there, or some other grand city. Not coming back to Belaquin and opening up some dusty old pub." Luna put her hands on her hips. "And what would be wrong with that?" She traced her finger through the dust of the wooden bar. "Besides, a pub is just one option. I could open a store, I could turn it into an inn, I could even rent the space to other people who need it in Belaquin. There's a lot of possibilities. But right now, it's just a place for me to think. Oh, and mess around brewing kava." Rhea sighed. "Must be nice to have options." "Oh, come on, Rhea," said Luna. "This is an exciting time for both of us. We're young. We're free to do whatever we want." "Luna, I didn't go to school. You know as much as I do that there's only a handful of really boring things to do with your life in Belaquin." "Yes, but if school is what you really want, it's not too late," pleaded Luna. "Look, all you really have to do
Luna,
is..."
"Luna, it's not the same. Look, my mom never saw the value in school like your parents did. She just wants me at her shop, just like her mother did before her, and her mother before her. And the money for school, I mean, that's no small thing. And back when everything happened with my dad, it just wasn't a good..."
Rhea turned to temper the moisture building in her eyes. Luna stayed still.
"I'm sorry. Really, I've never forgotten about... Well, I never meant to..."
"It's fine," sighed Rhea. A chilled silence passed. Rhea gulped down the last few sips of her kava. Now she felt awake, but her stomach growled.
"I'm gonna go grab some breakfast," she said, setting down the mug and turned for the door. "I know I'm in a bad mood, but I'm really glad you're back. I'll come find you in a little bit, okay?"
"Okay," Luna smiled.
"Don't forget to eat fruit or something with your half dozen of donuts."
Rhea frowned, then smiled. "I missed you, cousin," she said, exiting out the old wooden door. The blades of two wooden swords slashed through the air. Rhea broke away from the sword lock and jumped back. Her opponent was precise. Every slash was executed with tempered ferocity. The challenger's name was Wafen, a legendary swordmaster and Rhea and Luna's grandmother. Wafen never looked more alive than she did with sword in hand, her long battle robes flowing in the wind,
and her eyes as icy as her white hair that was tucked in a bun. In Waven's hands, even a wooden practice sword seemed like the most lethal of weapons. She waited for Rhea's next move, with her usual expression that was neither smile nor frown. Waven's eyes were filled with mystery, as if to plan her next attack and coach Rhea on her form at the same time. With both hands, she grasped the hilt of her wooden sword and raised it next to the side of her face. "Again," she said, and scooped her sword to slash up. Rhea jumped back, using the momentum to return a side swipe. Waven parried and struck Rhea's torso with her left palm. Rhea coughed and stumbled back, clutching what would soon be a bruise on her side. "Enough," said Waven, closing her eyes. "Not yet," said Rhea, rising to her feet. She felt a surge of energy. She charged at Waven, feeling her body lift off the ground. All her might poured into a powerful slash, but she watched as Waven sidestepped. Before Rhea could react, her back was struck by the hilt of Waven's sword. Rhea stumbled, collapsing to the ground. Waven struck the dirt with her sword and left it to retrieve a watering can. She filled it in the small pond by her home. "I sensed only eagerness from you," said Waven. "What do you mean?" defended Rhea. "How can you not be enthusiastic when you're in the middle of a sword fight?" Waven took great pause before responding. "Brute force and energy cannot supplement skill. I am not some idle tree who waits for the axe of a lumberjack." Rhea stabbed her wooden blade in the ground. "I guess I'm pretty distracted today. Luna's back, if you haven't heard." "This doesn't please you?" Waven asked, refilling her watering can. "Well, yeah, of course I missed her," replied Rhea. "Something's just been bothering me. Luna's been all over the country, met all kinds of important people, learned all these things, and now she's thinking of throwing it all away. She's going to take on her grandpa's old property here in Belaquin."
"Some consider Belaquin paradise," commented Waven.
"Yeah, people who don't know anything else," muttered Rhea. Waven set down the watering can and sat next to it, placing her hands on her knees.
"The road out of town is never closed."
"Right," said Rhea. "There's just a little problem of having no money for travel. Oh, and a map of where to go, and just having somewhere to go and someone waiting for me."
"Many excuses," said Waven. "There's only one reason you stay."
Rhea leaned forward. "And what is that?" Waven turned her head to gaze at the horizon.
"Fear."
A dumbfounded look slapped across Rhea's face. "Fear? I'm scared of leaving?" Waven remained silent. "You know, people used to listen to me and offer encouragement, but all anyone says now is, 'Sorry, Rhea, hope you figure it out.'"
"We all must find our own way," Waven responded.
"You know I know that," growled Rhea. "I had to do that after everything happened with Dad, and I'll figure it out now. It's just overwhelming. It would be nice to have some support."
"So you wish to be coddled," replied Waven.
Rhea exhaled her frustration.
"Forget it. It's getting late. Thanks for the lesson, Grandma."
She ripped her wooden sword out of the ground and stormed down the hilly path towards town. Waven remained still and closed her eyes while the chilly wind touched her face.
"Coddled. What a thing to say," muttered Rhea to herself as she kicked a stone along the dirt path.
The sun had set, but the moon shone bright, lighting her way to the Aquin River. She sat at the edge of the water and closed her eyes. Just then, a curious melody crept through the air. Rhea frowned and looked about, but could find no one playing the music. She shook her head and stared deep into the water. I hate being stuck, she thought. If it's all up to me, how do I do it? How do I pull myself out?
You could start by opening your eyes, came a man's voice.
Rhea gasped and shot up. She saw no one. Only the sound of an instrument was heard. She looked out at the grassy plains and into the woods. Nothing. Finally, she checked across the river. She was stunned. An old man with long white hair stood before her. He wore flowing red robes that bore the emblem of a salmon jumping into the air. A sword housed in a red and gold sheath hung from his belt. Most haunting of all was how he levitated above the river water while playing a strange flute instrument she had never seen.
Who are you? She said.
The man ceased playing and sighed.
Good evening. Introductions are in order. My name is Aquin.
Aquin? Replied Rhea. The same name as our town?
Aquin flashed an unsettling grin, and his body floated across the water. It's a fine name, is it not? I suppose that's why the town is called so, and why it was given to me.
Suddenly, Aquin vanished. Rhea backed away from the water and gripped her sword with both hands. She scanned her surroundings, but a cloud passing over the moon made it difficult to see.
Fear not. You won't have need of that sword for now, came Aquin's voice.
If you drop yours, I'll believe you, said Rhea. Aquin appeared before her.
Ah, yes, he said, retrieving his sheath and pointing it at Rhea. A chill ran down her spine. I came with a warning, Miss Rhea, Aquin continued. An enemy is following your every move and thought. And each day you ignore it, the stronger they become. But the power to defeat them lies within you.
He appeared a few feet behind Rhea. She backed up to the edge of the water. She raised her sword in a defensive stance. And who is my enemy? You?
Aquin flashed a sinister smile and vanished into thin air.
Rhea spun around, wondering if it was another trick. The clouds parted, and the moonlight shined once more. Rhea looked out at the water, realizing he was gone. Or is he? She thought. Her eye caught something in the river. There he is. Why is he swimming like that? Her eyes widened. It wasn't Aquin in the water. It was a helpless person floating by. Rhea gasped and dropped her sword. She took off her sandals and ran towards the water. Without another thought, she dove in and paddled as fast as her arms would let her. The person, a young boy, dropped something in his hand and it sunk underwater. His body followed soon after.
Hold on, Rhea cried.
With the moonlight as her guide, she dove underwater in fast pursuit of the poor boy in the river.
The Moonfish is written, produced, and voiced by me, Devin Pulaski. I also composed and performed the original music score. If you haven't already, please subscribe to The Moonfish on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. To follow and learn more about the show, open your web browser and type themoon.fish. There you can find artwork, behind-the-scenes production info, and a subscribe link to the Moonfish newsletter. If you think a friend would like to hear this show, please share it with them and leave us a review. It really helps us out. Thank you for listening, and remember, if you feel lost in this world, crippled by uncertainty and trapped in the darkness of fear, look up and listen. The melodies of the Moonfish will light your way.